A WRAL weather alert day is bringing the potential for severe storms. I'll show you the hours we're most at risk so you can plan ahead.
Then a woman pulled from a burning home and a firefighter injured when it collapsed. New at 7, hear from the hero doctor who helped them both.
Parents of an active shooter in Michigan were sentenced to jail time. Will that case impact similar cases here in North Carolina?
That ability to look the people responsible in the eyes and express the impact is immeasurable.
The ruling was emotional for a father who lost his daughter to a weapon that was unsecured.
Right now at 7, we are tracking heavy rain and storms in the forecast for tomorrow. This is the system that's bringing that risk of severe weather and damaging winds with it. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Ashley Rowe.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. We want you to be on top of all of this. We've issued a WRAL weather alert day for tomorrow ahead of this threat. Meteorologist Kat Campbell in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a closer look at some of the timing we'll see, Kat.
We'll see rain already moving in during the morning, but these are the hours when you need to pay the most attention to the forecast. 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. That's the window where we have the threat for damaging wind gusts, perhaps an isolated tornado. But the risk has gone down a bit today, and we first told you about this yesterday. It really depends on how much energy is available in the atmosphere. That's why it's a conditional severe weather threat. But with the rain likely to fill in during the morning hours, this should really limit how much energy is available for storms. That number isn't going to be zero, but the threat would be more isolated. 10 a.m., pretty much everybody's seeing rain, and we've got some heavier rain out there, but it's between 1 and 7 o'clock when we could see a broken line of some storms push through the area. By 6 o'clock, I think that threat will start to come to a close in the triangle, and even after the severe weather threat, we'll have the potential for some showers tomorrow night, but those wouldn't be severe. The severe weather threat tomorrow is a level 1 risk now. Previously, some of us were under a level 2 threat. That risk is a bit lower given the new data that we've seen today. We also have quite a bit of lightning on the way. I'll have a closer look at when the lightning could start to ramp up. I know this could affect some outdoor practices for kids tomorrow. Dan.
You got it, Kat. Thank you. Meantime, make sure to download that WRAL weather app ahead of tomorrow's threat. It also it allows you to take the radar with you anywhere you go. It's free where you get your apps.
A gun and ammo were found at a Cumberland County high school today. Deputies say staff at a nearby school got a tip that someone had a weapon at Southview High School. A school resource officer found ammunition and a plastic bag with pills in a student's backpack. A .45 caliber handgun was later discovered on campus. Detectives filed a juvenile petition for possession of a firearm on educational property and altering or removing a gun serial number. The student is in custody.
I'm Matt Tallholm in the WRAL Live Center. The parents of a two-month-old in Edgecombe County are now charged in connection with the baby's death. Take a look. These are the parents that are charged. 20-year-old Kamani Gray, he is on the left side of your screen, and 21-year-old Tatiana Hyman. Those are the parents of this two-month-old Kamani Gray from Princeville. The Edgecombe County Sheriff's Office says they were called to ECU Health in Tarboro after this baby was brought to the hospital with head injuries. Several days later, Kamani, the little two-month-old, was removed from life support and died from his injury. According to the sheriff's office, an autopsy done on that little baby determined that homicide from intentional head trauma was the cause of death. These two are now charged with voluntary manslaughter. They're being held at the Edgecombe Detention Center tonight.
All right, Matt, thank you. Take a look at some of these images behind me here. New tonight, we are hearing from a Durham doctor opening up about a life-saving moment, not in a hospital, but in a burning home. Dr. Abhi Mehrotra not only helped pull a woman from the flames in Durham last week, but he also treated one of the firefighters injured when that burning home collapsed. WRAL's Eric Miller spoke with him.
Dr. Abhi Mehrotra is used to facing emergencies, just not like this.
It was just surprising how quickly it happened.
The assistant medical director of the emergency department at UNC Medical Center, Mehrotra, was walking his dog Friday when he noticed smoke coming from this Durham home.
It just didn't seem right. Another neighbor was already calling 911.
Mehrotra went to the front door and found a neighbor still inside. He says it took some coaxing to get her to leave.
Either open the door, or let's get you out. And she couldn't open the door, so we had a conversation and had to kind of help and pull and assist her out that front window.
Mehrotra stayed until he was sure the paramedics could take over. Then he had to get to work, where he was in for another surprise.
As it turns out, one of the firefighters that was injured was one of my patients.
Two firefighters total were injured that day when part of the roof of the home collapsed. One, Donald Dixon, was trapped inside. According to a GoFundMe set up for Dixon, the fire melted his thermal imager and radio before he was able to crawl through flames to an escape. 5 days later, both firefighters are recovering, and Dr. Mehrotra has had time to reflect.
It's a little bit surreal.
Surreal. On a day where he was asked to save lives and heal wounds, both on the job and off.
You know, we're trained to assist in the situation when there's a patient in front of us. We go towards that patient. This was just a matter of following the instinct. There was no real time to think.
Eric Miller, WRAL News.
What a terrible fire feel for everyone involved. There's a GoFundMe for the injured firefighter we'd like to mention. You can find a link on our website, WRAL.com.
Tonight we are hearing from a grieving father after his daughter was killed in a wrong-way crash over the weekend. The driver who hit her had two passengers in the car when he crashed into Bianca Powell on I-440 near Capitol Boulevard. No one survived. Only on WRAL, Powell's father says this is a pain he wouldn't wish on anyone.
Well, you know, a parent don't ever want to bury their child. You know, you never know when your life gonna get cut short just like that.
The Powell's father describes his daughter as a funny, lively, free spirit. He said she had a clothing line. He plans to continue cultivating that in her honor.
Jennifer and James Crumbly are the first parents convicted in a U.S. mass school shooting. Their sentencing may set a precedent that could change how parents and other caregivers are held accountable, even here in North Carolina. WRL Fayetteville reporter Gilbert Bays spoke with an attorney about this and about what could change we could see moving forward.
Well, the case in Michigan is special. It's the first time in the United States that the parents of an active shooter are being held accountable for not securing a weapon that was used in a mass shooting.
It is the sentence of this court, Ms. Crumbly.
A Michigan judge called the acts leading to Ethan Crumbly's mass shooting at his high school in November of 2021 a train wreck that could have been avoided. Four people were killed, 11 others wounded. The judge blamed his parents and sentenced James and Jennifer Crumbly to a minimum of 10 years behind bars. So will the Michigan ruling impact active shooter cases here in North Carolina?
I think it's going to have to, as it should be, a case-by-case basis.
Michael Boos has been practicing law for more than 40 years. He thinks sending the parents to jail is sending a strong message.
If this gets everybody heightened to have gone out now and gotten some decent locks on their safes, gotten trigger guards for their weapons. If that, you know, if I could have gotten trigger guard stock last week or something, then, you know, that might have been the way to go.
Hope one day I can come up there with you to see.
Fon Dockery watched the Michigan case with great interest. He dyed his beard purple. It was the favorite color of his 8-year-old daughter, Genesis. She was killed in July by an unsecured handgun. An 11-year-old got out of his grandfather's safe. Dockery is using her death to fight for stronger weapon security in homes and accountability for negligent parents.
So our hopes is that other judges, other states will see just how important that is and why, and will adopt that practice.
So the two cases are different, but the ruling in Michigan may set a precedent for similar cases here in North Carolina. In Fayetteville, Gilbert Bays, WRAL News.
Our WRAL documentary, Unsafe, North Carolina Kids Dying from Gun Violence, provides some information to help you keep weapons out of the reach of children at home. It's available now at WRALdoc.com.
New tonight, a local teenager stabbed more than 20 times outside her school is telling her story for the first time nearly a year later. Investigators say Avery Slatcher was attacked by a former boyfriend in the parking lot of Pinecrest High School in Moore County. She spent 16 days in the hospital. In an interview that's only on WRAL, what she remembers about that day and just how far she's come.
I try to think about how I can be grateful for the things that I now have, more grateful than I was before, to realize that every day I am able to be here still and spend time with my family, and that could have been taken away from me so easily.
Talk about perspective. Slatcher talks about the outpouring of support that she has received since that day. WRL's Carly Haynes has more of this exclusive interview on our late news at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRL.
My goodness. A dairy herd here in North Carolina has tested positive for bird flu. The State Department of Agriculture confirmed this positive result this morning. The virus has been previously found in herds in six other states. Movement from affected herds into North Carolina has been restricted because of this. By law, milk bought in North Carolina is required to be pasteurized, and that process kills bird flu and other kinds of bacteria should any infected batch make it into the supply.
A new poll released today shows Joe Biden and Donald Trump in a dead heat in North Carolina. The Quinnipiac University poll shows Trump leading Biden by a small margin, 48% to 46%. Undecided voters, Green Party voters, and people who say they don't plan to vote at all fall into the remaining 6%. For more on the poll's findings and how it compares to polling WREL previously conducted in these races, head to the NC Capital section of WREL.com. Still ahead, new rules that'll make the drinking water in your home safer. Why this part of the country was an important stop for the EPA today. Plus, just how much sodium is in Lunchables? The eye-opening comparisons just ahead.
This is an in-depth update, We're seeing some movement now on a story that so many of you have been passionate about and messaged me about. The town of Duck in the Outer Banks has unanimously passed an ordinance that bans anyone from doing a balloon release. People actually yelled out thank you after the vote. Now, we've covered this topic recently after dozens of viewer emails, people who watched us cover various balloon releases over the years and wanted me to discuss the environmental concerns of essentially littering into the air. And there are many. They pollute our water, they kill our animals, etc. If you want to see that story, you can find it on WRL.com. Just search In Depth. Now, the state doesn't have any laws against balloon releases, but Duck joins a small list of North Carolina towns that ban them, and you'll notice that they're all coastal towns. And that makes sense to me because that's where they see the impact with their very own eyes. When beautiful and intelligent sea creatures wash up on your shores after choking to death on a balloon like this one a few months ago on our coast, it's easier to feel the direct effects of the problem. And if you think about the problem as an iceberg, this perfectly describes the famous quip, considering we know how far a balloon can travel when it's released, like the British boy who let the balloon go in England and it was found by a girl in Australia, meaning you don't have to release a balloon from the coast for it to land in the ocean. In fact, if you stepped out of your home right now and let one fly, not only could it land in Duck, it could wash ashore in Hawaii. A lot of viewers liked this coverage and kind of the frank way we were discussing about it. Melissa said, I loved your news segment on the balloon release. You didn't just stop at why balloons are bad. You went deeper and made everyone think about more than just balloons. And the problem involves us all. She was referring to the end of the piece where I explained to all the people who were frustrated by the balloon releases that we all do things that are blatantly bad for the environment. So maybe we shouldn't judge, at least not too harshly, when we see people let a balloon fly to, let's say, memorialize a kid, insinuating that we could all do a little bit more. I believe the way I phrased it was, if your activism starts with keystrokes, like an email, are you actually helping or are you just pretending to? Now, Stephanie and a few other viewers didn't like this ending. She said, without the public making you and others aware of harmful environmental practices, I doubt if you would have put that whole segment out for public consumption. So the snarky ending, I'm not sure why you bothered. It kind of muddied the waters. So, Stephanie, I wasn't going for snark, being sarcastic or irreverent or anything like that. I was being serious. I was being blunt. Sometimes the medicine tastes bad, you know? But how about this? How about we stop talking and typing and we start doing instead? We leave our screens behind and we get our hands dirty a little bit. Together, let's do it together. I Googled for 5 seconds and found a bunch of cleanup events and volunteer opportunities all over the area, like the Great Raleigh Cleanup or the DOT Litter Sweep. Wake County has a bunch of events. After all, Earth Day is coming up. It's the 22nd, I think. What better time to do it? So let's find one. Not just Stephanie, all of us, all of you. I'll do it with you. I'll come out. Let's get together. Let's work on this. It'll be fun. Email me your ideas. We'll find a date and an event that works. I'll let everyone know the plan. If you want to get involved, please reach out at dan@wrl.com. Tell me what is on your mind. We'll get involved and we'll go in depth.
Dan, one day I'm going to convince you to do on composting. Okay. Safer drinking water is on tap for families from Fayetteville to Wilmington. Today, the EPA was in our area to announce the nation's first ever limits for PFAS in drinking water. The new regulation requires utilities to remove six types of forever chemicals from water to the lowest level they can be reliably measured. The goal is to make drinking water safer. Officials say new regulations can prevent thousands of illnesses, including cancer.
PFAS doesn't care what your politics are, doesn't care where you live, doesn't care how much money you have in your pocket. When it comes to the basic needs of clean drinking water, no matter what your political party is, or whether you live in the South, on the West Coast, or in the Midwest, everyone should be able to turn on their tap and trust that the water that they're drinking and giving their children is safe.
Fayetteville has been grappling with forever chemicals. You know, in 2017, researchers discovered that chemicals by a chemical plant owned by Chemours had been leaching chemicals into drinking water supplies for decades. It'll cost $80 to $100 million to install filters at the PWC plants in Cumberland County. A new report shows Lunchables offered in public schools have more sodium than an entire Happy Meal from McDonald's. A Consumer Reports investigation found concerning levels of heavy metal in the popular kids' food Lunchables. They also found some kits have up to 740 milligrams of sodium, nearly half the daily recommended limit, depending on a child's age. Robeson County Schools says they recently stopped serving their students Lunchables altogether. Let's send things over to meteorologist Kat Campbell now, as we've got that weather alert day coming for us tomorrow, Kat.
And, you know, we still have some time. Now's the time to get outside, take your dog for a walk, go for a jog, because tomorrow it's going to be a rough day. We've got quite a bit of rain on the way. A little bit of sun peeking through tonight as the sun sets, but the clouds roll back in and thicken up overnight. By the time you wake up in the morning, rain will be moving in. I'll say this. I think the rain's going to be pretty widespread by 9, 10 a.m., but if your morning commute is earlier in the morning, you may be able to get out ahead of it. Go ahead and grab the rain gear. That's why I have a medium impact for the morning commute. The afternoon commute impacts will be high. Severe storms are possible through about 7 o'clock, and it's going to be very windy as well. Then later on tomorrow night, we'll see some lingering showers after the severe weather threat comes to a close, and it's going to be quite blustery tomorrow, even into the evening. If we look at the timing, Futurecast shows some light rain around at 8 a.m. That becomes more widespread and heavier by 10, 11 a.m. And then lunchtime could be a mess. Maybe bring your lunch to work tomorrow. It's just not going to be a great day to go out and about. Once we get past 1 o'clock, we could see some thunderstorms embedded in here, and some of those could be strong to severe. We've got storms through about 5 o'clock in the Triangle and in our eastern counties between about 6 and 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. Even after that, we've got some lingering rain, but it's less likely to be severe. Let's talk about lightning as we see more outdoor practices and events this time of year. It's important to talk about the lightning threat. I don't expect any lightning tomorrow morning, but we could begin to see some lightning cross from South Carolina into North Carolina closer to 11 a.m. or noon. It would be pretty isolated then. And then it's after 1 o'clock that we really have more clusters of thunderstorms developing and a better threat of lightning, though that threat should end by about 8 o'clock. For your morning commute planner, it's a 30% chance for rain at 6 a.m., 8 a.m. a 70% chance, and then 100% by 10 a.m. The earlier you can hit the road, the better off you're going to be tomorrow morning. If you need to get something done in the morning, maybe an errand or a quick dog walk, try to do so early. It's a WRAL weather alert day tomorrow, and then Friday is still pretty windy. Just an isolated shower possible Friday afternoon. No big deal, not worth canceling any outdoor plans Friday. And then make some outdoor plans this weekend. It should be a great spring weekend. 73 Saturday, mostly sunny. The air is still nice and dry. Sunday, we're at 84. Humidity is low. Next week, we stay warm with highs in the low to mid 80s, but the humidity is going to be inching up. Our low temperatures only dip into the lower 60s next week. Ashley and Dan.
We're starting to see that. Okay, Kat, thank you.
The Canes are hoping to keep the streak alive into the playoff season. And we're not just talking about wins. The impressive feat for PNC, thanks to Caniacs.
Are you a small business owner? If so, the city of Raleigh wants to hear from you.
They're asking business owners with 50 or fewer employees to fill out a survey. They want to know what kind of business you run, how many people you employ, and information about grants and city organizations that help your business. The survey closes on April 19th, so reach out and let them know. The loudest house in the NHL has sold out every single home game this season.
Not all that surprising, but it is interesting, isn't it? The National Hockey League says the Canes sold out all 41 of their regular season games at PNC Arena. The final one was Sunday. PNC's listed capacity is 18,700. The Canes averaged 18,798 fans per game, and they expect to continue that sellout streak into the Stanley Cup playoffs later this month. Just last night, the Canes beat the Boston Bruins 4-1. The North Carolina Courage back on the field this weekend, and you can catch it right here on WRAL.
The entire league took a nearly two-week break so players could compete in the She Believes Cup. The U.S. defeated Canada yesterday to bring home that trophy. There's a celebration this weekend. Some of those players will be here in Raleigh as the Courage take on the Portland Thorns at Wake Med Soccer Park in Cary. You can watch it right here Saturday night at 7 o'clock on WRAL. What a great team to have in our area. So the Greensboro Science Center asked, and North Carolinians delivered.
Meet Persephone and Zephyr. The two serval kittens were born to mom Kira a few weeks ago, but the center wanted help naming them. Persephone is the Greek goddess of spring. Zephyr in Greek means westerly wind. Dan, you're into Greek mythology.
I am. Those are great names.
The cats are still behind the scenes, but updates will come from the zoo on social media. They're so sweet. Those will be a fan favorite for sure.
They're really, really cute. You almost think like, ooh, I kind of would want one, but when they grow up, they're wild animals. They don't like, they like doing their own thing.
Thanks for making WRAL your choice for local news.
Our next newscast is 10 o'clock on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Have a great night.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.